Welcome to the Self-Help Podcast, a weekly no-nonsense guide dedicated to your emotional health and well-being. Presented by entrepreneur Edward Lamb and psychotherapist Sean Orford. For more information, visit liveinthepresent.co.uk.
Hello and welcome to episode number 16 of the Self-Help Podcast, your weekly dose of intellectual debate, casual chit-chat, and brain food.
Yeah, definitely brain food.
Yeah. Was that better than last week?
Yeah, definitely not dog food.
Still needs a little bit of work, I think.
Yeah. You're getting there.
We're getting there.
It's good.
How are you doing, Sean? You okay?
I'm good, yeah, I'm good. Got a bit of a throat, I think. Got a frog.
Bit of frog in the throat.
Yeah.
Do you want to have a cough so I can edit it out?
There you go. I understand that my stomach gurgles a bit, and it's because I'm on this 5-2 diet program.
Right. So you haven't eaten anything yet.
Yeah, I won't be eating until 2 o'clock, so that's like 16 hours.
Is this 5-2 diet an official thing?
Yeah,
something you've made up?
No, 5-2, yeah. You know, we just ought to do a week on things like that.
Yeah.
5-2, 2 days a week, you just have restricted calories. But there's supposed to be an enhanced effect if you have a 16-hour gap between when you stop eating and when you start again.
Right.
Hunter-gatherer mode in the body. So okay. I'm experimenting with it. So.
Is it working?
I've lost it, that
combined with your running.
Yeah. I shall definitely be a Greek god very soon. If not today. Yeah.
Beautiful. For more information, just quickly about the work that we're doing, for all the new guys out there, visit liveinthepresent.co.uk and you'll find out lots more information about Sean and I, and Ree, the other part of the Live in the Present crew.
Hi, Ree.
Hi, Ree. Yeah. This week we're going to be talking about mindfulness. You may have heard that expression mentioned here and there. It's kind of working its way into popular culture. We're going to be talking all about that wonderful word and how it can benefit you. Before we do, let's catch up. Sean, what have you been up to this week?
My main thing, because it ties in with the topic today, is doing a presentation with a bunch of guys. I do quite a bit of work with the FMC, International organization, and we've been doing a session with them on mindfulness and how mindfulness can affect health and safety practice in the workplace.
Yeah.
Very, very powerful, being able to live in your present and stay safe.
Oh, it's cool. I was there at the back when I run. We recorded the session, so we're going to let the company have what we did and whether we can create something for the wider world too and get the presentation out there.
Yeah, it'd be good.
Watch this space. But it was good, wasn't it? It's interesting how you get. I mean, you get these huge organisations, and it's good to see that they're trying things and they're willing to, you know, take these things on board.
Yeah, FMC are a very open organisation. I mean, they are into development of human potential, really, within their manufacturing processes, and that's good. Good to see. It's good to work with.
Good on them.
Yeah.
Cool. Yeah, I've had another good week. I've been reading a book. Finally got around to reading a Louise Hay book.
Oh, brilliant.
Is it You Can Heal Yourself?
Yeah.
The big one?
Well, you can heal your life, you can heal yourself.
Yeah, it's one of those.
Yeah.
It's good, though. It's cool.
I mean,
lots of similar topics and things that I've obviously learned through living the present and all that. But, yeah, really cool. And affirmations as well. Finally trying to get into that world.
Yeah.
Get some affirmations on the go.
I know so many people that do hypnotherapy, hypnoanalysis work who use Louise Hay's affirmations as part of their inductive work, trying to get people to get their minds tuned into positive affirmation.
Yeah.
And she's made a huge contribution. The story is that she had cancer, but using positivity and mindfulness that she managed to deal with it.
I'm not quite at the end of the book yet, but I've flicked to the back and there are the pages and pages of tables about certain affirmations for specific ailments and diseases.
And what her theories would say, and she's not alone in this, is that when you get a disease or a state manifesting in your body, is that it starts in the mind and the emotions first. But she would also say that you can deal with the physical symptoms by changing your mind and your emotions as well.
Okay, well, this is weird because, I mean, this is what we're going to be talking about probably for the next half hour. Funny how things all link together, hey? Good old law of attraction. What about the news this week, Sean? What's caught your eye?
I've gone for an article here, which is in the Huffington Post, and it's written by a lady called Dawn Kluskin, and it's about teaching children meditation and mindfulness.
Yeah.
And an interesting article, but it shows how you can increase kids' abilities, concentration, memory, performance, alertness, awakeness, by just a little bit of effort, a little bit of input.
Yep.
Good article, worth reading. It's worth doing with yourself, and if you're a parent, it's worth doing with your kids.
Definitely.
And encouraging your school to do it as well.
My wife's a teacher, primary school teacher, and I think she's actually done some basic introductory philosophy for like 4-year-olds.
Yeah.
It's fascinating.
Awesome,
you know, it's really good.
Yeah. Because they are making moral decisions, aren't they?
Yeah.
Ethical decisions all the time.
They are. Yeah. And one of the things, just coming back to Louise Hay early in the book, it talks about how when we're born, we're kind of these perfect beings, you know, and gradually over time we become less and less perfect. And I can see that, you know, with my little lad, because he's just incredible right now, but he's yet to learn the darker sides of things in the world and things that can happen in life. And
One of the things that I think can be an issue with education, is that sometimes the education process can suppress that natural creativity.
Oh yeah,
in a child.
Yeah, well, I've had many an argument with my wife. She does amazing work, and the teachers that I know are fantastic.
Yeah.
And that they get a lot of pressure put on them, you know, by the powers that be above them that are trying to force feed all this other stuff. Not getting too political, but it's all about, you know, exam results and learning specific skills and in life, and maths and all that, which is important, but you know, emotional well-being isn't taken into account.
But is education, or should education be about allowing and enabling someone to reach their potential, or is it about creating the next workforce?
Well,
because politically that's what it is.
It's tough, isn't it?
Yeah,
it's tricky, but we could talk about that for a long time, maybe, and we will at some point in the future add that one to the list. My news, it's an article actually I picked up a few weeks ago, but I've been trying to squeeze it into a show, and I'm going to now. It's a fantastic one that's on slate.com called Loneliness is Deadly, and basically it's this lady who has written about the fact that loneliness is kind of the unspoken issue in society, and it kills as many people as, you know, more than obesity, and it's on a par with smoking, that kind of thing. Yeah, she linked it with loneliness and being on your own damages your immune system, which then can lead to all sorts of crazy things. And her experience was that she moved away from New York to be in a more creative place, a quieter part of the world, and it didn't have the desired effect. It backfired a little bit.
Right.
So loneliness is deadly.
And interestingly, in the UK, it's about 52% of the population living on their own now.
52?
It's high, yeah.
Wow. Okay, it's something I'm aware of. I work on my own most days, you know.
High suicide rates were with psychologists and psychiatrists. They bounce around a bit around that because they don't process the stuff they're dealing with. But farmers took over. And it's because the farmers are on their own. We've stripped all the labour away from the farm, so a farmer is out there working on his own. There's no one to talk to.
Right.
No one to relate to.
Mm.
And you get this spike in suicides from that.
Wow.
Yeah.
Great article. We'll put the link up on the website
in
the show notes. Just quickly before we move on to our topic, a regular listener and fan of ours, a pal of mine actually, called Gary, he was asking me about EFT, Emotional Freedom Techniques. It's something to do with tapping and pressure points.
It depends on how you come at it. Because if you look at the idea that there are lines of energy on the body, which would be in China, they would be called meridians. In India, they're called nadis. If you look at on your arms, you can see how the moles and the freckles are joined together. They're actually in lines because they actually develop on your arms. I'll show you my arm, Ed, so that you can see it. This is the Alec. See the line down there?
Okay.
Yeah, they all actually grow on the line. And you'll get red ones that are developing. As you get older, you get more on the lines.
Wow.
So people get, they call them liver spots, don't they? That kind of stuff. But on those lines are where an acupuncturist would put their pins.
Yeah.
It's where an acupressurist would put their elbow in to get the pressure. Someone that was doing doing, which is the same kind of technique, would tap. And EFT is another version of those kinds of therapies. And what you're looking at is you're looking at unblocking energies,
right?
Really. You're releasing stuff. And that works on the basis that emotional tensions are held in the muscles sort of psychosomatically. And it's an energy thing. If you can release the energy, you release the tension.
Wow.
Yeah, because the idea of an acupuncture pin is you put it in and it draws the energy up the pin. That's the idea.
Mm. And it works, would you say?
Yeah, well, I've had acupuncture effectively. Yeah. It's worked for me.
Yeah. Cool. I mean, Gary was telling me that it's early stages, but the NHS over here in the UK are looking at bringing it as a treatment for various things. So.
Yeah.
Interesting. Keep an eye on that one.
Yeah. Yeah.
Righto. Let's move on to our topic. Mindfulness. You may have heard this expression, this word, in all sorts of places. I certainly have, and I'll mention one in a bit. But Sean, let's start off. What is mindfulness?
Mindfulness starts off as a concept, usually related to Buddhism.
Is it one L or two?
If your mind is full, as opposed to being mindful.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mindful, as in.
This is a small point. Sorry. Yeah. Cut you off.
Your mind isn't full. Yeah, no, that's right. It's good. It's good. We relate mindfulness to Buddhism, but Buddhism makes certain kinds of assumptions that people relate to. So in Pali, the word sutti means what we would look at as mindfulness, and it means things like retention and alertness and recollection. It's the learning part of the system. The more mindful you become, the more that part of your system is activated. Uh-huh. In Hinduism, the word, or Sanskrit, which is the Hindu currency, would be the word chit, which means consciousness. But it goes back further than that. It goes back into what I would see as the Ayurvedic civilization, the Ayurvedic world, where consciousness is seen as a balance between thinking, feeling and doing. And the more you balance thinking and feeling and doing, then the more mindful you become. It's easy to act without thinking or feeling, easy to feel without thinking.
Yeah.
Easy to think without acting. You know, it's only when those three elements come together that you start to get real mindful activity. You know, it's clever thinking about something, but if you don't do anything about it, it's not mindful.
So there's quite a history behind mindfulness. But I mean, just a couple of weeks ago, I'm a bit of a sports fan, and the tennis US Open was going on, and Novak Djokovic, who he lost in the final eventually, but he's what, top two players in the world. He was talking about in an interview how he uses mindfulness meditation, and he has done for a few years now. And he says that there was a point where his career was a bit stalled. He was only like number five in the world. He developed this practice of mindful meditation, and it's kickstarted his career, and it just elevated him that extra few percent, which took him right to the top.
But what that does, it comes back to our home company, our own work, live in the present, because when you're mindful, you're living in the present, you're not worrying about the past and what has happened, and you're not anxious about the future and what will happen. Mm-hmm. So that you're actually in the present, and that's what he did.
Yeah.
Whereas he was cutting out those influences of past and fear of future to actually be in the present, be able to function in the present.
Yeah, I think there were stages in his career earlier on, before he really started winning tournaments and got to where he is now, almost unstoppable. He was having strange kind of injuries were cropping up, and he'd be needing more kind of comfort breaks during matches, and he was getting quite anxious and stuff. We'll come on to this more and more through the discussion, but the things going on in your mind have an effect on your body.
Yeah, completely, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thoughts become things in terms of actions, but thoughts also become things in terms of physiology. And we know straight away that if you have an anxious situation or an anxious thought, that your heart rate goes up and your body goes into fight and flight, that straight away you have an effect on your system. And that works the other way around. You can start to slow your system down by having a different set of thoughts and feelings.
Usually when I start to research one of these, I'll go on the TED website.
Yep.
To look what talks have been done and what's going on there. Great resource, by the way. If you don't know about TED.com, get on it. Incredible resource. And if you type in mindfulness and TED in Google, you'll get a talk by a chap called Andy Puddicombe.
Yeah.
Who,
good guy.
Have we mentioned Headspace on the podcast before?
Yeah, I think we have.
But he's developed.
It's worth a mention again.
It's
brilliant.
I mean, his meditation resources, getsomeheadspace.com, are fantastic. And his TED talk, which is a nice little 10-minute talk, talks about mindfulness. And how much is mindfulness linked to meditation then? Or what?
Well, it's interesting. If you turn it around and say that to be mindful is to live in the present, is to be in the present, then any activity that focuses you in the present is mindful. Yeah, I can remember when I was in a monastic setting, there was another monk who was sat down and he was playing with his mind and saying, I am being mindful, I'm being mindful. And what he was doing, he was peeling blanched almonds and taking those brown skins off.
Yeah.
And he was sort of being in the present, and he was so convinced he was being in the present, and then he slipped and cut his finger with the knife. Because, yes, he wasn't in the present. He was too busy playing the game of being in the present. Okay. Because when you're actually there and you are in the present, it doesn't matter. Meditation is a fabulous thing for me and for Andy Puddicombe. But you don't have to meditate to live in the present. The one that I've learned recently is when you run and your feet slap and you get into the metronome of running, you focus into the zone, you get into the present.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you have your ways of doing it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cycling for me is a great way of getting around and just getting some good thinking done.
Yeah.
Blanching almonds, I've tried that too. I can see why you kind of went off.
Yeah,
and I
cut your finger, yes.
Yeah, it's not, but it's dull. I've done that.
Yeah, yeah. And an example I used a couple of podcasts ago was when Pam, my mother-in-law, makes cakes. She makes wonderful cakes, but she does it because she is focused in on what she's doing. Her mind isn't wandering somewhere else. You know, she's there with the cake that she's making. It's light.
Yeah.
Because she's doing that. So mindfulness is something that, yes, you may use some kind of practice, as in meditation or running or cycling, that gets you in the zone, but the benefit is that it takes you into the rest of your life, so that if you're mindful for an hour a day doing your practice, that actually slides into the other 23 hours of the day.
Right.
So you're more focused, and then you develop all the physical benefits of mindfulness, which are palpable. Mm-hmm. They're there.
Yeah, there's a Gandhi quote, isn't there, that you actually mentioned?
Oh, yeah, no, I like this. Gandhi would say that because he was so busy and life was so tough for him, that he would make sure that he took an hour out every day to look after himself, so he'd do his meditation and attend to his own needs. But if he was really, really busy and the pressure was really on, then he'd take out 2 hours to look after himself. So, and we do exactly the reverse. As soon as the pressure comes on, we stop looking after ourselves, and that's when things start to go wrong. Mm-hmm. Whereas when the pressure's on, we should look after ourselves more.
Yeah.
And we don't do that. That's mindfulness in action, really.
Yeah.
You know. One of the side effects, which is a Gandhi kind of issue, I suppose, is that the more people get into mindful practice, the more they develop insight, and with insight comes things like empathy and compassion, kindness and love, that all become a part of that process, as opposed to the other side, when people start to get anxious and the adrenaline comes up and anger comes in, and then you get the anger and the hatred and the violence. It's another side of the personality,
right?
Other side of the system. Yeah, and mindfulness reduces those negative chemicals. So, I mean, there are huge benefits in mindfulness at all levels with all people, yeah, in terms of mindfulness practice. So I suppose the issue always is, what is it that you, dear listener, need to do to get in your zone?
I mean, just the word mindfulness, I've got written down here. To me, it means, I mean, I haven't looked at the definition. In fact, should we look it up now?
Yeah, we'll look it up. I mean, mindfulness has become such a part of my world as a psychologist, psychotherapist, that you can do master's degrees in mindful psychology, mindful practice, mindful therapy, using mindful psychological therapies as alternatives to things like CBT, so that you're working with anxiety,
right,
stuff like that. Very, very powerful. And I use mindfulness techniques with clients all the time. So when we did that presentation with FMC, we actually did a mindfulness practice, and we got all these guys that were managers and engineers, and they were all sat there doing a short meditation.
Yeah, I've got a little video of that I took. Just
right,
silence,
yeah.
It's on my Instagram feed. Just a room full of people.
Just calm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's interesting when people come out of that meditative space that there's a palpable energy that comes with them. And it can transform learning situations like that, where everybody is now focused in.
Yeah.
And they've let go of the past and the future, and they are actually being where they are.
Mindfulness, or mindful, one L, by the way.
Yeah.
I've seen people spell it with two, but it's one. Yeah. Attentive, aware, or careful. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, I mean, careful for me is the interesting one. Because, I mean, when I think mindfulness, without any of the connotations of kind of modern philosophy and all that, I just think of, being careful and almost like being kind.
But for me, mindfulness, it means being present to yourself in the moment. You know, I'm actually here now, And the interesting thing is your body is always here now. Your body is always in the present. It's your mind that goes other places. And it's being in touch with your body in the moment. And so that when you start doing mindful practices by focusing on the body, focusing on the breath, focusing on the heartbeat, if you're walking, focusing on the way that you're walking and doing mindful walking so that you're aware of where your centre of gravity is, yeah, and the way that your body's moving, that you actually come into the present, because your body can never be anywhere else. Your body's not in the past or the future. Your body's always here. And if you tune into your body, you will automatically come into the present.
Well, I mean, I was just thinking then, I mean, trying to get in the habit of being mindful, there are an infinite number of ways you can do it. People might be thinking, okay, well, when can I do it? You know, do I schedule an hour in the morning or 20 minutes? Well, you don't need to do that, do you? You can do it. Any activity you're doing, you can incorporate mindfulness.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And it's I suppose, from my point of view, it would be, if you're a carpenter and you're cutting a piece of wood, you know, you can cut it mindlessly and just kind of hack it off. Or you can cut it mindfully and make it the most perfect cut you've ever done, exactly straight, you know, the best cut that it could ever be.
Yeah.
And there's something about pure mindfulness, which is excellence, whether it is the good cake, whether it is the perfect cut, whether it is the best bike ride, whatever it is, because you're so focused on what you're doing, it can't be anything other than a good thing.
Yeah, you can link it easily, yeah, with when you're eating as well, you know.
Yeah.
And what's the link with gratitude then as well? I mean, obviously...
If you're looking at eating, the thing for me to eat mindfully would be, if you have food on a plate that's presented to you, then where did the food come from? And it's having that gratitude for all those people and processes that did all the things that they did to make that food appear on your plate. And there may be hundreds of people involved in that process. And if you're into eating meat and fish and stuff like that, there's also the issue about that being gave up its life so you could eat its leg, or yeah, whatever it is, mm-hmm, that's in it, isn't it? So that there is a lot to be grateful for, but that means that I'm eating mindfully. And in being mindful, because we eat with our eyes and our nose as well as with our mouth, we start to get a greater experience of the food. So one of the things in mindful training would be, when you're eating, varies where you go, but they would say that you need to chew a mouthful 20 times before you swallow it, so that you really get it working, yeah, and you become mindful of what it is. Some systems would say 32 times.
32? Yeah. That's quite specific.
If you try and chew a mouthful of rice for 32 times, there's nothing left to chew after 32 times. You know? Uh-huh. But then they would say, but that's the way your digestive system would benefit best from it.
Yeah. And this thought about how mindfulness can affect your physical well-being, I've got written down here about it's linked with, but if you're trying to cut off anxiety, which should be the aim for all people because we're all affected by it to some extent, it's got this link with your heartbeat and your heart rate.
Yeah, I think of it two ways, that if you change the way you think and you feel, you will change the way that your body responds, so you'll reduce your heart rate and respiration. But if you reduce your heart rate and respiration, you change the way you think and you feel. It's either end of a tube. You turn one end, the other end turns as well. Uh-huh. So if you look at mindful practice, when you start to get, and I've done this in laboratories, if you wire people up, heart rate, blood pressure, skin moisture, respiration, that kind of stuff, is that as you take someone through a simple technique of just a few minutes, you can just watch all the dials dropping in as their blood pressure comes down, which has a phenomenal effect on your system, and it raises the endorphins. And then you get back to the idea that you were talking about originally, about the immune system, that when you engage in mindful practice and you still your body, you boost your immune system. Your immune system becomes stronger, more resistant to disease.
So ultimately, and this is a big selling point for mindfulness, it can extend your life.
Yeah, well, we were looking at some stuff earlier on, and one of the things that fascinates me, and we'll put a link into this, is that it's assumed, there's a guy who put a scale together called Kilner, and we'll put him up, but he created a scale where he reckons that every being on the planet lives a lifetime, and a lifetime is an average of 1 billion heartbeats. So he would be looking at the idea that a whale that would live for about 150 years, its heart beats about every minute would be about 10 beats. whereas a hamster, a tiny little thing, might be beating 450 times a minute. But in a lifetime, they both have the same amount of heartbeats. Mm-hmm. And because heart rate and breath are connected together, they would have the same amount of breaths as well. So the, one of the things that comes up in that kind of research or that kind of theory is, okay, if I'm only allowed 1 billion heartbeats in a lifetime and I go and run a marathon, my heart's beating like crazy. So that doesn't, I'm using up my heartbeats, I'm shortening my life. Actually, it works the other way around because a heart rate at rest is usually 70, 73, 75, that kind of thing. When someone is fit and so that they can run and do things, the heart rate drops down. The resting heart rate can become as low as like 50, 56.
Yeah.
So that although it appears like you're losing lifetime in running, you're actually gaining it in the rest cycle.
Yeah, because the 20 hours a day when you're not running, it's
So the people that are fitter live longer because their heart beats slower. People that are calmer live longer because their heart beats slower.
Mm.
Yeah, and that doesn't mean to say that a couch potato lives longer than someone who's running around, because if you look at the physiology of a couch potato, their heart rate is terrible. Their heart rate, their blood pressure, everything is as bad as they're the worst stressed person on the planet.
Sure.
Yeah. So it's that idea about being active.
Mm. I'm going to download. I haven't got one. You can get the apps for that monitor your heart rate.
Yeah.
It's incredible, really. But I know how they do it. It uses the camera that faces you to look at your face, and it can pick up the slight changes in colour in your face.
Yeah, as the blood pulses through.
Yeah. Amazing.
Yeah.
And it does your heart rate from that. And I was mucking around with one with a pal a few weeks ago. That's the kind of exciting life I live. But it was good fun because he was deliberately trying to. He saw it as a game to get his heart rate down, and he did it initially, and I think it was about 70. And they said, I can get it lower, I can get it lower. And then he did some deeper breathing and closed his eyes, and a minute later, it was down to like 65, and I think he got it down to about 58, 60.
But that, to me, is a really good example of the fact that you can affect your physiology.
Yeah.
You can, in the same way that if you get anxious or scared, your heart rate goes up, you can consciously put your heart rate down.
Yeah.
And one of the classics for that is 7-11 breathing. So that if you breathe out for more than you breathe in, you reduce the levels of adrenaline and cortisol in your system, and your system starts to flatten out.
Right.
It starts to come down. So anybody can affect the way that their system is working by just a little bit of mindful awareness of what they're doing with their body. Yeah, it comes down to things like food as well, what you eat.
Yeah.
There are some things that you eat and they'll stick your heart rate through the ceiling, and other things will calm it down.
My little lad, I think he must have had a tooth coming through last night or something, because he just, 10:30, 11 o'clock, just went awful, the yelping came from his bedroom.
Mm.
And I went, we're taking it turns to go and try and sort him out. And the goal was to calm him down and get his heart rate down. And there's various things you can do that, just give him a little stroke on their cheek or whatever.
Yeah.
That wasn't working, so we had to pick him up and just kind of gently kind of rock him back down.
Mm.
He's doing that thing where his breath, crying and breathing.
Yeah, and that's interesting, because when you gasp like that, then your levels of adrenaline in your system go up.
Yeah.
Yeah, so if some people are anxious or they're angry or upset and they start to shallow breathe and pant, then it starts to come up and get worse.
Mm.
Rather than breathe out, relax, and it comes down.
We got him back to sleep. 11:30, he was asleep.
Oh, that's not bad.
It
worked. Not bad.
That was all right, wasn't it?
Yeah. Did he sleep all night?
No, he woke again about 3:30. Cut him down again till 5:30-ish.
It's the fun of being a parent.
Yeah, it's brilliant, isn't it?
Yeah.
Cool. Okay. Be calm. Live longer.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's... I love Bob Proctor, who's in his 70s. I always remember him saying that people kept telling him that he needed to slow down. And his thing was, forget it. He said, I've got more energy than most 21-year-olds. I'm still going. And he said, what people need to do is calm down and speed up. And I think that's really real. When people get anxious, they become inefficient and they can't do what they're trying to do. But if you calm down, you become much more effective as a person.
Yeah.
And the calmness, the mindfulness, it all goes together. Yeah. Mindful people are calm people. Yeah. People that are mindless are anxious and fraught.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Some self-help takeaway tips then. We've already mentioned Headspace. People should check out that for kind of meditation resource.
Yeah. Well, I think that idea about take some time out each day is very real. And if you can't spare the time, then you're telling yourself that you need to make more time. Yeah, you can't afford not to look after you. I always say to clients, especially women, what have you done for you in the last week? And most of them are scratching their heads and they can't find anything.
Yeah.
And if you don't look after yourself, how do you expect to function as a person?
Mm-hmm.
You know, looking after yourself positively is a mindful act. Changes your life.
Yeah, you've got to make time for it.
Yeah. Yeah. It isn't a case of I can't. It's like if you don't, it is a case of anxiety is a killer.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it will kill you. And it is when people are anxious, it's like a slow form of suicide.
Yeah.
You know, and if the choice is to be anxious or be calm and live longer, got to be.
Mm, and some little things to look out for, I mean, in terms of listening to your body and what it's doing. I mean, it's tricky to monitor your heart rate 24/7, but I mean, people can just right now or.
Yeah, it's having an awareness of what's going on in your system, isn't it? And if you know that you have a potential for high blood pressure or for a very fast heart rate, then you need to get something checked. You need to go and talk to your doctor and get yourself sorted out. You need to take control of your system, yeah? Especially men. Men are terrible at going to the doctor.
Yeah.
You know, wait until something's fallen off before they go to the doctor, whereas women are okay going, don't they? Yeah, and it is a case of taking responsibility for yourself, making sure you're okay.
I'm going to start monitoring my... I mean, I like tracking things anyway. I mean, I love monitoring that. I can't wait till the time when my phone monitors all the different little variables in my body. I think it'd be awesome.
Yeah.
But monitoring my heart rate...
Well, because I'm doing this running thing, I've got a chest strap.
Yeah.
That picks up the heart rate and turns it to a phone, to a watchy thing on the wrist. Yeah, on the phone. And what I'm looking at is the recovery rate between spiking heart rate to like 160 plus and then how quickly can it come back down to rest.
Yeah.
And I've noticed my rest rate has dropped the more I've run.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas I was averaging like 75, I'm now down into the mid 60s.
Cool.
You know, it's come down quite a lot in the last 3 months. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
I guess people may have a quick look at their heart rate now. And you need to be careful if you get a high reading, you don't want to create more anxiety there.
Yeah, but one of the things is white coat syndrome, is that people's heart rate and blood pressure goes up as soon as you test it, because the fact that it's being tested makes them anxious.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it is white coat. You go into the doctor and you always have a higher blood pressure than you would normally have as soon as you go in.
Yeah. Cool, and one final mention, of course, to the toolkit on our website. I mean, when you go to Live in the Present, there's a couple of places which say get our free mindfulness toolkit.
Yeah.
I need to check whether I've put 1L or 2. If people sign up for that, they get a cool little ebook and they get some free meditation files,
yeah,
as well as weekly reminders about this podcast. But,
yeah,
you know, that's something, yeah, else people can get.
Yeah, and all those things are designed to increase your well-being, make you more mindful, get you to come down.
Yeah,
and relax. Be calm and be effective as a person.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, be happy. Anxiety does you no good at all.
Right, thanks, Sean. That's cool. Resource of the week.
I'm going for an article here that I think is really worth reading. What are the benefits of mindfulness?
That's relevant to what we've just discussed.
Yeah, it's pretty much. and it's a nutty little thing where written by psychologists, and it's for psychologists and for clients to look at. But you can actually do a little exam in there. You can do a test, which is quite good. But it goes into depth a lot about mindfulness and the benefits and the things that mindfulness practice is going to do for you. And it's good when you're looking at something like that, because you can personalise a programme. You start to see where your deficiencies are and what you need.
Yeah.
So I recommend that's good. But the link will be up on the site for that.
Marvellous. Yeah. And I've got an app or website called calm.com. Nice domain name. Must have put,
yeah.
Bet they paid a fortune for that. But it's a fantastic resource. Go to calm.com or download the app. I think it's just for iPhone at the moment.
Yeah, I've got it on the iPad.
But it was just a website initially. It's just a cool, really cool website. You go there and you're immediately greeted by just a really relaxing scene. I think you can flip between things like a beach scene and a forest, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And then you can set a short meditation. You can, well, there's a 2 minute, a 5 minute maybe.
Yeah.
It's a few variations, and you can just, wherever you are, and this applies to maybe people that working at a desk all day, perhaps things are getting on top of you, go to calm.com, click a quick button, and poosh, do a short meditation.
Yeah. The other thing that we've mentioned before, and that is Marty Borison, One Moment Meditation on YouTube.
Yeah.
Which is amazing. I do that with the doctors.
That's a brilliant little, yeah, it's good. Little clip, isn't it?
Good, yeah.
Really nice.
But it's that short stuff. I mean, I go on about meditating for an hour, but if you can just take out a couple of minutes or a minute, and you can calm your system, it's a really powerful thing to do.
Mm. And if that works for you, then you can then build on it. And maybe...
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. I know a guy who has tried doing longer meditations and can't, and he might do 20 moment meditations in a day.
Yeah.
And that for him is a very, very powerful technique.
Mm.
But he couldn't sit for 10 minutes. It would just be too much. Yeah.
Like it. Okay, cool. Thanks, Sean. Yeah. For more information about the work we're doing and for all the links that we've mentioned throughout today's show, visit livingthepresent.co.uk and you'll find it all there. You can follow us on Twitter, Facebook, etc., etc. And if you really, really like us, we'd really appreciate a review on iTunes, which we've had, I think, 115 so far from around the world, which is awesome.
Yeah, thank you.
We really appreciate the support, and it does help the show because it helps us, bumps us up the old iTunes rankings.
Yeah, yeah.
So if you like what we do, leave us a review.
Yeah, that rhymes.
That rhymes? Oh, that's it. Sean, thanks for your time today.
Thank you, Ed.
Next week, we're going to be talking about relationships and how to keep your relationship on track.
Yeah.
So we'll see you then.
We have lots of practice then.
We do. We do. We've got so much wisdom to impart.
Okay, you take care.
Yeah, see you, everyone.
Bye.
Bye.